This is oral history interview number 24 with Edwin D. Greer, MD, graduate of the medical school's class of 1926. Dr. Greer, could you tell us something of your early family and childhood?
Yes, I was born in Oroville, California, November 25th, 1895, and I went to school at Oroville Preliminary. Then I went up to Oregon for a while, and I came back with my family to Chico. I went to Oakdale School in Chico, and I went from there down to Berkeley, where I took the McKinley School course and high school. At that time, when I finished high school, I had studied pharmacy since 1915, and I worked in a drugstore, and in 1917, I enlisted in the Navy. And at that time, I was transferred into the Marine on detail with the Marine Corps, the medical department. And from there, I was, because of my pharmaceutical training, I was up on my rating, and I was sent originally to Corfu, Greece. And then I went to, instead of going there, I went into the flu epidemic in Philadelphia, and I was delayed there for a little while. Then I went from there to New London, Connecticut, where I took a ship to Chicago, a cruiser, and went to Bermuda, and ended up temporarily at the Azores Island, Base 13. From there, I radiated various parts of the area by boat and plane into Corfu, Greece, at one place, and then when the war was over, I left Azores and came back to Hampton Roads, was discharged there and given transportation to my place of enlistment in San Francisco.
How long then were you in the service during World War I?
Oh, let's see. I went in 1917 and I got out in 1919.
Mm-hmm. And during this time, were you were working mainly as a, were you a pharmacist or?
No, I was a hospital corpsman.
Hospital corpsman.
Mm-hmm. Detailed with the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm. In the Marine Corps then.
Even did surgery as a student.
I see.
And had a lot of preliminary information and teaching in surgical techniques.
I see. You learned this from doctors you were working with?
Yes, naval doctors.
Naval doctors, uh-huh. Were you officially a member of the Navy or of the Marine Corps?
No, I was a Navy man.
You were a Navy
but
man.
But the Marine Corps is taken care of by the Naval, medical department.
Uh-huh.
The Marine Corps has no medical department.
I see, uh-huh. And did you ever come under enemy fire when you were in these places?
No, I've never been in any enemy fire. We convoyed President Wilson into France.
Oh, you did?
On a flotilla.
Uh-huh.
But we've never been in a firing squad.
Mm-hmm. Is this what made you decide to be a doctor, this experience?
This convinced me that it was my job to do.
Mm-hmm.
And incidentally, my profession, crude as it is musical. I'm a musician by profession.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't read music, and this thing came along, and my pharmacy helped me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately when I got back here, I enrolled in California, UC of California, pre-medical.
I see. You did take the pre-medical course. Going back a little ways about something you said a few minutes ago, did you yourself catch the flu in the epidemic in 1970?
Yes, Philadelphia.
Uh-huh. Did you have a serious case of it?
Yes, I'll give you just a short thing about that. We were in a temporary locality there in Philadelphia, League Island, and I woke up one morning and I felt that I was sick. And I took a big dose of Calmel to start with. So pretty soon the ambulance came along and took me into the hospital. Big ward in Philadelphia, was at League Island. And there they put me to bed, and the first thing they did was to give me a big dose of Calmel, which I told the nurse that I'd already taken my Calmel this morning. And she said, "Oh, you're delirious, take this and don't talk." I took it, and pretty soon I became delirious, and then I don't remember much about it, except that before I passed out with this delirium thing, with a high fever, I staggered out of the nurse's station there, and well, there was nobody there at the moment, and I took a tumbler and took about half of that tumbler full of whiskey, which was right there.
I see.
And I staggered back to bed, and I don't remember anything until the next morning. The next day after that, I went on duty.
I see.
That shows you what kind of a deal I had on it.
Were many of your friends sick with it?
Yes. That place, when I woke up the next morning, both beds on either side of me were empty. And they didn't walk out.
I see.
And they had died during the night, you see.
Another thing I wanted to ask you also about your father's occupation.
He was a carpenter to start with, and also he was a storekeeper. He in the merchandising store.
I see. And when you were in grade school and high school, what were some of your interests and activities outside of school?
Well, my main activity in high school, incidentally, I don't recall anything important in my pre-high school schooling, this routine. But in high school, I was interested in music. I played for dances.
I see.
In the rhythm group.
What instrument did you
drums
play?
Drums and rhythm string instruments.
And did you continue to do this in college?
Yes.
You mentioned in college you did take the pre-med course.
Yeah, I started out in pre-med. And then I went along, and my important course in pre-med at UC was a course in comparative anatomy, which really was precipitated my coming to this school. And I'd had my pharmacy experience for 7 years in a drugstore. And I was originally planned to go on in the pharmacy.
I see.
With music as my profession. So at the middle of my junior year in pre-med, I couldn't find any courses that I could use in my professional objective. So I took out a leave of absence at that point in the middle of my third year in pre-med. And I took a trip to the Orient on an Empire State boat as a saloon watchman.
I see.
Job. And I had that Oriental experience in that year. And the next fall, well, incidentally, before I went on this trip to the Orient, which was very interesting, but I wouldn't want to involve that. It's a whole book full of stuff on that Oriental experience. Well, anyway, well, I applied with three schools, medical schools, for entry, thinking I'd never make it because my pre-med course was incomplete. I was on the waiting list at McGill, waiting list at New Orleans, and I was accepted at Washington University.
I see.
On the basis of my pre-medical courses of anatomy, comparative anatomy, and pharmacy.
How did you decide to apply to these three schools?
Well, I decided that from the rest of my pre-medical course, there was nothing left that I would be interested in. It was just a waste of time. Even some of my pre-med courses I took were just pain in the neck, excuse the pun.
So you went on to medical school then, before you really finished college. You didn't wait to do that.
Important too, to let you know that the interval between my return from the Orient and my coming to Washington,
mm-hmm.
U,
mm-hmm.
I worked in the lumber mills and in the woods, timber falling and that sort of thing.
I see. How long did you do that?
Well, I was there from the time I got back from the Orient, which was in July, and then I went up in the woods and worked until I had to come to Washington.
I see. Mm-hmm.
I'd been accepted by that time.
Mm-hmm. Were there any teachers at the medical school that particularly impressed you? Perhaps
yes.
You could tell us about them and maybe any incidents you happen to remember.
Well, Dr. Schaefer was, I was particularly interested mm-hmm. in him because of his ability and his personality and
mm-hmm.
so on. And my chemistry course was such that I was not particularly interested in titrating 10th normal solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So I would set up my apparatus in chemistry, go over to a clinic and work in the clinic there because I'd already done surgery, see.
Mm-hmm.
And I come back for the review in the late afternoon and put my equipment away. So the associate professor there in chemistry decided that Greer was not qualified to graduate from the school.
I see.
So Dr. Schaefer called me in and he says, Greer, you flunked the course. He said, well, I said, it doesn't make any difference to me. I'm going to be a doctor whether you like it or not.
Uh-huh.
I'll go someplace else so I get to be a doctor. Because
uh-huh.
I know what I need to be a doctor, the kind I want to be.
Uh-huh.
I'd already been indoctrinated in medicine, don't
uh-huh.
you see?
Uh-huh.
So he gave me some books to review for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, you come back in the fall and we'll give you a little preliminary quiz and see if we can negotiate a program for you.
Mm-hmm.
I got up in the woods, in the way off in the mountains, woods in the, working on logging railroads.
Mm-hmm.
And on the 4th of July, I happened to think of Dr. Schaefer.
Mm-hmm.
They call him PA.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote him a note stating that I had not been able, because of my need for working, to get money, because I didn't have a nickel.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, well, do what you can and come back anyway with your books,
mm-hmm.
which I did. He gave us a little examination, three questions. The first two were uneventful, but the third one was, discuss what you would do to make the chemistry course more attractive, generally.
Mm-hmm.
Because he recognized in my attitude that I was not satisfied with the stuff that we were getting in the course in chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
I ignored the first two questions and wrote two blue books on the third question.
Mm-hmm.
He called me and he says, Greer, I don't understand you. I said, I can understand that all right. But I said, I have my program cut out and that's all there is to it. He said, Greer, if you will average 80 in the sophomore course, I'll give you credit in chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, my sophomore year was interesting. There was one of my classmates, Dutch Siebert, that's the name I couldn't think of just
mm-hmm.
was the president, and I was his associate, I mean, vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And there were certain problems came up in our sophomore year, which had to do with the honor system.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Schaefer suggested that we appoint a residence committee. There was some microscopes missing and so on, which I was I was elected to form the committee.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Well, I never did get around to marking for me, forming
uh-huh.
a committee, but first thing I know, within a week's time of the microscopes had returned,
uh-huh.
and there wasn't any more equipment in the
uh-huh.
because nobody knew who the members were on the committee.
Uh-huh.
Because there wasn't any.
Uh-huh. That's very interesting.
To this day, Dr. Schaefer would like to know who was on that committee.
Uh-huh. We do have some of Dr. Schaefer's papers in the archives. Some people have called him rather distant and
yes.
rather forbidding. Would you agree with that?
And what?
That he was distant and forbidding?
No. I had no problem with him at all. because I told him frankly my attitude, and regardless, I said, it doesn't make any difference what you think. And he backed right down the hill and went along with me, as you know, by this time. And his attitude toward me was always good. Every minute that I was with him, it was just wonderful.
Do you remember any other stories about him?
No. His associate in chemistry, I don't think of his name at this point, but he's the one that was conducting the laboratory work, and he's the one that noticed that I was not particularly interested in the titrating of 10th normal solutions.
In the lab work, then, you really didn't perform experiments?
No.
You set up your equipment?
Oh, some of them
Some of them you did, but you set up your equipment.
The ones that I was knew was of no value to me, I didn't do.
I see. Uh-huh.
And they know I didn't do it. And so that's my chemistry association. Dr. Erlanger was another man that was very difficult, very distant. Very hard to approach.
I see.
And I was right on thin ice with him. But he finally decided that I was justified in going on with medicine.
How were you on thin ice? Did you?
Well, my work, according to him, the details were not there because I spent a lot of time in the clinics over there. Every minute I had to go over there, I'd work over there.
Could you see patients in the clinic then as a medical
as
student?
A student? Yeah.
I see.
And that's what I wanted, you see. That's what I needed.
Well, how did they, did they assign patients on a rotating basis, or how did...
Yeah, we'd get the card out and we'd be supervised by a doctor,
I see.
Of course. And we'd negotiate with the doctor and the patient.
Did any other students work over there? Or were you
some of them.
Some
a few of them. But you see, most of them went along according to the normal curriculum, which is a lot of it is unnecessary. And I really still believe that. And the trend now, so far as I know lately, they're cutting out a lot of this stuff that is of no value to the student in his afternoon and his professional days.
I think also I've heard that they're trying to have the students get some clinical experience before the third year, too.
That's
that
right.
Seems to be a new
That's
trend.
Right.
You did that 50 years ago.
That's right. I was before my time.
Yes.
And I think Schaefer recognized that in me. But I was older than...
Well, you were older, too, than...
See, we were 3 or 4 years older than that. Because we were all war babies. The first class after the war was over.
So you had more experience than many of the students. You had a better basis to judge what you needed.
Many things. I had experience, general contact with people. I had a wonderful training in the Marine Corps service because I was in that service. And I learned medicine. I learned surgery from the naval doctors as a chief petty officer in the Navy.
Were there any other teachers that particularly impressed you
in medical school?
In medical school?
Well, of course, one of my interesting courses was anatomy because I'd had comparative anatomy.
Yes.
And the associates up there that I made were just wonderful, particularly with Mildred Trotter, Dr. Trotter. She was very, very helpful in my anatomy stuff.
Now, have you seen Dr. Trotter at the reunion yet?
I saw her yesterday.
Oh, very good.
And she's a wonderful teacher and a wonderful person.
Did you have much contact with Dr. Terry?
Yes, but never anything more than just the routine stuff, technical, dissection and whatnot.
Were you a member of a medical fraternity?
Yes, Phi Beta.
Did the students, did you feel much pressure as a medical student, competition and these, you know, pressure to succeed?
No, I had no problem. I had my definite program set out in my mind, and that's the way I went. And I went right along, and I had a lot of controversies over the thing, but I stood my ground. I said, this is it. Take it or leave it.
How do you think medical education differed from today?
Well, at that time, the uniform requirements on every student, and each one is different. The majority of medical students in those days were particularly interested in one form of teaching or another. So that the uniform program of teaching did not fit every student. Very few were actually in a normal standard curriculum, you know, without having some hesitancy about going in with it. And my objective was to learn the things that were important in my future, because I knew what they were going to be, having had for pharmacy and also all the surgical treatment therapy, I mean the training I had in the Navy. So that I went to school just largely to get my license and diploma.
Were you here 4 years in medical school?
Yes.
And was there a examination for a license?
Yes, I on my junior year in medical school, I was relief resident in obstetrics and gynecology. And at that time, I got acquainted with all the OB men, particularly Henry Schwartz and Otto Schwartz, the son, and several of the other men in that group. Very wonderful people. I did a lot of obstetrics in the Barnes Hospital. But I went through the same thing my senior year, and I spent a year as a resident in obstetrics there. And after that, the next year, I spent a year with the Mopac Hospital on Grand Avenue. General work. I had a lot of good work there, a lot of marvelous training in that school.
And did you do after that?
I left St. Louis after I'd taken the state board here, passed it, and spent a year practicing here, so that I
in St. Louis
reciprocity into California without an examination.
I see. Well, I meant to ask you one other thing. Did you in medical school? Did you keep up for your musical interests?
Yes.
Did you play in a band at this time?
Well, I played in a covered band on South St. Louis, just temporarily, because I had to get a place to sleep. I had no money, and I had a place to sleep and two meals out of that.
I see.
Until my sophomore year, then I had to quit all this stuff, because the sophomore year is the toughest year in medical school.
I see.
A lot of different courses. A lot of the courses were no value to me, but I had to do it on them. I was on probation with P.A. Schaefer. And I really bore down. I had to. And I borrowed some money that year. And the next year I lived in the hospital. I didn't have to.
I
wore operating suit most of the time. And then my senior year was also an OB. And so after my sophomore year, after I made that rip, then there was no problem anymore. Because what I was interested in, and after the sophomore year, that's the thing that you should do anyway. That's a little different than the standard curriculum at that time, too. Now, they've changed the whole thing so that every student is separately supervised from the beginning.
I see.
I mean, that's my impression anyway.
What made you decide to go to California?
Because that was my home. I lived in Boston. I went to high school there.
So you're really returning home.
Yes.
And did you set up a private practice?
In Oakland.
In Oakland.
And I started that 40 years ago.
Was it hard to get established
in a practice? I spent 3 years in Merritt Hospital as a resident, Merritt Hospital Oakland. And at that time, it was in the early 30s, and the depression was terrific. And I quite often thought I'd have to go back and work in a drugstore, washing bottles and stuff.
I see.
But I didn't. I went in with another doctor there, an older doctor in urology, and he gave me my desk for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately I got busy.
Mm-hmm.
Because the hazard of being poor was, I lost that, you see.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I was beginning to get started.
Mm-hmm. Was this a general practice? Or
yes, I did everything. Incidentally, this man was a urologist I went in with,
mm-hmm.
Dr. George Ramley, and I did some of the work for him too, by virtue of my obligation to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then on one trip to Chicago, he met Dr. Diekman, who was a St. Louis OB man.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And Diekman says, "How's Greg getting along with his obstetrics?"
Mm-hmm.
Ramley says, "We don't do obstetrics. He's been doing urology with me." And then Diekman told him about my work here.
Uh-huh.
And when he got back, the first thing I knew, I had three OB patients.
I see.
Uh-huh. I did a lot of OB there.
Uh-huh. Did that develop as your specialty? Or did
at that time, yes.
At that time. Uh-huh.
But later on, I went into general work.
Then you went into general work later. Uh-huh. Are you still practicing? Or have
no,
you retired?
I retired on the 1st of July, last year, 1975.
1975. And for the whole of your career, you were in Oakland then?
I think what?
Were you in Oakland?
Yes.
The whole time?
I was on the staff at Prowler and Providence and Merritt Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very busy. From then on, I had no more problems after mm-hmm. that.
Can you tell us what a typical day was like when you were in practice?
My practice?
Yes.
Yes, well, I had always routinely got up in the morning early, mm-hmm. went to the office, because in the Marine Corps we learned regularity.
I see.
And I mean it, regularity.
What time would you get to your office then?
I got there around 7 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. and then about 9 o'clock I'd go to the hospital, make my hospital round.
Were there patients there at 7?
Yes, you betcha.
Mm-hmm. So you saw patients for...
I've been seeing patients at 7 o'clock in the morning ever since I've been in medical practice.
I see. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And then 10, you went to the hospital?
Hospitals. And my obstetrics demanded my sudden movements to get mm-hmm. to their needs.
What about the afternoons?
The afternoons, it was 2 to 4, 2 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then
was this back in your office seeing patients?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And in the evening, with this urology business, Ryan had the evening hours, and I was three nights a week in the office there till 9 or 10 o'clock.
I see. Mm-hmm. It sounds as if...
From 7 to 10 was my usual day.
I see.
Except mm-hmm. the weekends, and that mm-hmm. was always obstetrics here or there.
I see. Mm-hmm. Did you... What was your membership in professional societies? And
I had no professional society.
Mm-hmm. You didn't bother then to join?
No, I didn't have time for that. I was really dedicated.
Uh-huh. You were working from 7 to 10.
Nice.
And that was a normal day.
That's right.
Did you get have house calls too?
Yes, oh yes.
Uh-huh. Was that every evening or?
I lived 7 miles from the medical centers,
mm-hmm.
my office, and I had a medical call office. You see that all my calls were recorded.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And wherever I went, I was available, telephone.
Mm-hmm.
And all my associations, other than actual work, was with the hospital. Personal
mm-hmm.
contacts, personal hospital meetings, mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
Did you continue to play music?
Oh yes, I still do.
Mm-hmm. What instruments do you play?
My it's a rhythm group we
I
call
see.
It. It's
mm-hmm.
drums and that was my original thing, and then it's the strings, guitar,
I
and banjo,
mm-hmm.
ukulele.
Mm-hmm.
I taught ukulele for quite a while.
I see.
But I don't read the music, know the music.
I see. Mm-hmm. So you do it by ear then?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I learned several operas by ear.
Mm-hmm.
That's just easy for me. That's all.
How much time do you have to do this, to participate
in music?
Well,
it's funny, of course.
Uh-huh.
And I'd have to get relief from my routine medical work.
Mm-hmm.
And I had alternates to see which I could do for my medical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, we did a lot of dance work for the sororities in Berkeley.
I see. Uh-huh. That's interesting. Could you tell us something about your philosophy as a physician? You've already indicated that in medical school you were very patient-orientated.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And my association with the patients, after my experience in the service and my pharmacy training,
mm-hmm.
Gave me an insight into psychiatry, which every doctor should have.
Mm-hmm.
Psychiatry as a specialty is not for me or anybody, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a person that's allocated to some way, a large tangent of some
mm-hmm.
sort from the medical field, to become a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that every doctor should be his own psychiatrist. I never did refer anybody to psychiatrist. I never would.
So you dealt with the emotional problems
right.
yourself. Of your patients.
That's right. My
uh-huh.
patient, when a patient walked into my office, I looked at the patient, not
uh-huh.
what was the matter with him.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of times he went out of there having lost the idea there was something the matter
uh-huh.
with him. Because
uh-huh.
all I did was sit there and listen.
Uh-huh.
And the first thing you know was, gee, doctor, I feel so much better.
Uh-huh.
But I was not a psychiatrist,
uh-huh.
I was just a plain doctor.
Uh-huh. I see. Uh-huh. Is there any other aspect of your career as a doctor that you would like to mention? Anything we haven't
Yes,
talked?
I was interested in different religious forms of medical interest,
mm-hmm.
Especially the Orientals. And I studied the Oriental idea of needle puncture,
mm-hmm.
the Chinese. And my trip to the Orient, I studied that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never equipped to accept that in my profession
mm-hmm.
because it was too variable in its approach.
I see.
And it has a high percentage of hypnotism in the treatment with a needle puncture.
I see. Mm-hmm.
That I know.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that hypnotism thing, which I don't approve of, I could do in my own interpretation of people, personal equations,
mm-hmm.
to eliminate a lot of unnecessary procedures in the treatment of that patient.
Mm-hmm.
You understand that?
I think I do, yes.
It's the same philosophy that I've had through medical school.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't spend any time on stuff that was of no value to me.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about your trip to the Orient?
Well, this was a sudden trip that I got it from a friend,
mm-hmm.
a college friend, a serviceman in the Marine Corps. And he was a port captain in San Francisco. He said, "We got a trip for you. Call me up at 11 o'clock in the morning."
Mm-hmm.
At this time, I had just taken my leave absence out of college.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So he said, "You get over here with a suit on and get over here as fast as you can because the boat leaves at 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So I got borrowed a couple of dollars from my mother, and I got over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was signing the ship's papers, and the whistle was blowing and the move was pulling out.
I see.
Uh-huh. This job I had was a night watchman on a ship,
mm-hmm.
passenger and freight, and on the old Empire State boats. And that was the Empire State Boat. And we headed for Honolulu and the Midways and then into Yokohama and Hong Kong down to Manila and over down towards the Malay Peninsula. And during the stopovers in these different ports, I would take tangents
mm-hmm.
and study the local philosophy, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and religion. I've studied most of the religions in the world. And
I see.
And I've used that a lot in making my personal equations easier.
Uh-huh. What do you mean by personal equations?
Your capacity for understanding and cooperating with the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the matter with them?
I see. Mm-hmm. Did you often find then that they were emotional rather than physical problems?
Oh, of course. But I would never say there's nothing the matter with you.
Uh-huh. I see. Would you ever say to a patient, there's nothing to matter with you physically, but there is emotionally?
No. That's bad.
Uh-huh.
Because you make an emotional problem out of the patient, he'll never get over it. You
uh-huh.
tell a patient, have you ever had any trouble with your heart,
uh-huh.
George? No.
Uh-huh.
Well, listen again, see.
Uh-huh.
Doctor, there's something on my heart. Well, it's not very important.
Uh-huh.
That guy will never get over heart trouble.
Uh-huh.
He'll have heart trouble the rest of his life.
Uh-huh.
Now that I know, because I've seen it so happen so often.
I see. Uh-huh.
No, it's an interesting thing. First, you have to have an entree to a patient.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get that. And you do it by listening first.
I see. Mm-hmm. So you listen carefully to what the patient says.
Yeah.
And then what do you do next after?
I minimize the thing that bothers him the most.
I see. Well, does that mean that if he has a serious condition, you wouldn't tell him about it? Or?
I minimize it.
Minimize it.
Tell him what it is.
Uh-huh. Do you think it's wise to tell the patient the whole truth, or do you
you have to use your judgment on that.
Uh-huh.
That was my main job, you see.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And if a patient comes in with cancer, for instance,
mm-hmm.
well, doctor, is it serious? I said, you have to decide whether it's serious or not.
Mm-hmm.
Put the load on the patient, because it's what you do for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to make it serious or not.
I see.
What the doctor's doing for you is less important than what you do for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can start out, and you've taken the load off of me.
Mm-hmm.
In medicine, of course, I use very little medicine.
Mm-hmm.
I learned.
I see.
That medicine has the least important in the treatment mm-hmm. of the patients.
I see. So you use little. You try to use a minimum amount.
That's right.
Of medicine.
Because every patient, I tell them, this medicine is essential for what's classed as what you've got. See?
Mm-hmm.
If the medicine doesn't fit, you don't take the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You won't need it. If the medicine is worse than what you got, the matter with you, you'd rather get along with what you already got
mm-hmm.
without getting more trouble.
Mm-hmm. Or if the medicine gives you has side effects, then
right. Psychologically, medicine is bad for the patient,
mm-hmm.
even though they depend on it.
Uh-huh.
It's bad to be dependent on any kind of service.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, here's a family coming in on vacation with three children
mm-hmm.
from Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
The kids are all sick. They've got the pills with them that the doctor sent with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still sick. So they... I said, well, now, let me see the medicine that you brought down with you before we do it. I examine them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find anything the matter with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't tell them that.
Uh-huh.
But they're sick from the medicine, probably.
I see.
I said, well, leave the medicine here for a few days. You're going to be in town.
Uh-huh.
And let me study the medicine, and you can get it when you come back.
Uh-huh.
And then I found out that the majority of people with something the matter with them do not tolerate milk.
I see.
Very definitely.
Uh-huh.
So I tell these kids, I said, now no milk for 3 days.
Uh-huh.
No pills, nothing.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, die, we have to have the medicine. I said, you don't have to. You wait, I'll be responsible for you.
Uh-huh.
3 days later, they come in, they're all well.
I see. Uh-huh.
No more milk.
Uh-huh. So you found this to be a common allergy to milk?
80% of sick people do not tolerate milk.
I see. Uh-huh.
Now that means that it's of no value to them.
Uh-huh.
The milk is of no value. It's the hardest food we have to digest.
Uh-huh.
It's something you don't chew. It's considered a solid food.
Uh-huh.
You don't salivate it.
Uh-huh.
It goes right on through. You just pick up the milk stuff in the stool
uh-huh.
as it went in.
Uh-huh. Is there any other food that you think it's best to avoid by cessation?
Yes, there are other foods that are essential in allergy problems.
Mm-hmm.
Milk is an allergy problem plus indigestibility.
Mm-hmm.
Milk is the hardest food we have to digest, period.
Mm-hmm.
That's established. And it's beginning to come into the public eye now.
Mm-hmm.
The chocolate is a famous one for allergy.
Mm-hmm.
And pineapple is one, and there's mm-hmm. several other foods that are not compatible with certain people.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean they're ill with it. I mean they can't use it.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. What other techniques did you use in your practice?
Well, the approach to the patient. For instance, if you're going to operate on a patient or deliver a patient, by this time you know, you've studied the case,
mm-hmm.
and you know what they're. And the first thing when you walk in, the patient's on a table there, the nurses have taken the clothes off, and there he is. Gee, what's going to happen now?
Mm-hmm.
So, are you going to stick a needle with me, doctor? I said, we have to give you some medicine of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And transfusion, I did lots of transfusion.
I see.
And I sat down with the patient. I don't grab the syringe and the needle right away. I sat there with him. And I say, well, what's your objection to the needle?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it hurts. And I said, well, this won't hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'm going to give you this medicine with a hypodermic. Now you look over that way and don't say nothing. And as soon as I get ready to give you the needle, I'll tell you before I give it to you.
I see.
So I get the needle over there, and there's a way of giving hypodermics and it don't hurt them.
I see.
That's what I've learned in medicine.
Uh-huh.
I do spinal punctures around a bit of pain and stuff.
I see.
And that's not the Chinese stuff.
Uh-huh.
I don't have no idea about that. I mean, I don't accept that.
Uh-huh.
But as I say, there's a certain amount of psychology, not psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
as a preliminary
mm-hmm.
to these approaches to the patient,
mm-hmm.
which cuts down the hazard of whatever you're going to do to them.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they're at ease.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, put the patient at ease, even if they're in pain.
Mm-hmm.
That's the general thought that I have mm-hmm. for that.
And again, that's very patient-orientated.
Right.
Isn't it? Are there any other comments you'd like to make?
Well, I think in any doctor's approach to patient or association with the patient, unless it's a surgical job where the doctor never sees the patient
mm-hmm.
as a patient, he just goes in, that's his job, and he's asleep, and the patient goes to sleep, and the surgeon comes in, he's done his job, and walks out, and he never sees the patient again.
Mm-hmm.
His associates or his students.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, the doctors have so many people that are helping them that are not MDs. They're licensed.
Mm-hmm.
But they are also subject to suits.
Mm-hmm. This gets into the business of malpractice
right.
insurance.
And some of these young people at doctor's age or whatever, mm-hmm. nurse's age, they're subject to suit and plenty.
Mm-hmm.
And the malpractice problem is the thing that terminated my active practice.
I see. Did the thing just get too expensive?
Well, I couldn't begin to afford it.
Mm-hmm. So that, were you working part-time when you...
I've been a lone wolf all my life except for my uh-huh. short uh-huh. time with this fellow Riley for uh-huh. just a couple of years.
Uh-huh. But you had a private practice?
Yes. Always by myself,
mm-hmm.
except on this occasion in the depression of the 30s, early 30s,
mm-hmm.
Well, I either had to ask for help like that, or mm-hmm. go back on a daily wage of some kind. So.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell us about your wife?
Yes, my wife was named Lena Blacker, B-L-E-I-C-K-E-R, from Belleville, Illinois.
Did you meet her? Did you see
her? I met her in Barnes Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
She was at the nursing school, Washington mm-hmm. University Nursing School, they call these grants.
Scholarship,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And she was a graduate nurse here in obstetrics at Barnes Hospital with me. She graduated the same year I did. And we worked together on obstetrics, on obstetrical mm-hmm. wards in Barnes mm-hmm. Hospital. And then after I went to Oakland, as soon as I could, I got her to come out there, and we were married in Carson City.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, she worked in a hospital in Oakland as
mm-hmm.
a nurse,
mm-hmm.
under her maiden name.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, as we got better established, why she didn't have to work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But in my last 10 years in medicine, were spent in a little town called Arnold.
I see.
In Calaveras County, California.
Mm-hmm.
And she, during this time, she acted as my nurse at intervals, office nurse,
mm-hmm.
assistant. And in 1965, when I was 70,
mm-hmm.
I decided I would retire in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
I moved up to this town where there was no doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was indoctrinated to a semi-private practice in Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
And I got busier there than I've been in Oakland.
I see. Mm-hmm.
So that's my story. And
mm-hmm. Did you have any children?
No.
No children.
No children.
Mm-hmm. A few minutes ago you said that you had to earn every penny on your own,
mm-hmm.
and in medical school, because you supported yourself then through medical school.
My sophomore year, as I say, I didn't have time to earn any money on mm-hmm. the side then. I mm-hmm. had to do this full time on mm-hmm. medicine,
mm-hmm.
and at that time I had to borrow money,
mm-hmm.
you know, to tie me over that year. Then the next year I was resident there,
mm-hmm.
relief resident,
mm-hmm.
and of course, when I went to Mopac Hospital, Group City, I got $100 a month there.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, I was a millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
The first one I ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, the feeling was not so severe
mm-hmm.
of being poor.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any comments about present-day medical education?
Yes, I think that the present-day medical education is in a stage of transition to the point where it's not definitely outlined to the student as such.
Mm-hmm.
Medical student coming here today, his curriculum is most uncertain.
Mm-hmm.
In my day, the curriculum was well established, had been for years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there any other comments you'd like to make? We've talked for quite a while now, and have something else that would be fine.
To me, the future of medicine is very definitely unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main comment I have mm-hmm. to make.
Well, thank you for coming and consenting to give this interview to us.